The countdown is on and holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind. Like the NFL Game Day Bingo Set, customizable with your favorite team's colors and name, perfect for your football-loving family and friends. Not shopping for a sports fan? Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from average gardeners to home chefs. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you're shopping at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White. Up in the great white north, starting to get a little cold up here, so I'm sure it's starting to get a little cold up there in the six. How's it going in Toronto, Dylan?
Not too bad. It is cold, but you know, the hot stove is cooking. Is that what a hot stove does? With the Taylor Ward, Grayson Rodriguez trade, which kicked off the festivities, and then Raisel Iglesias side. So things are starting to heat up, if you will.
Yeah, 100%. What did you make of that Grayson Rodriguez for Taylor Ward trade? I thought it was a little unusual, and there's certainly some fantasy implications here. What was your initial impression, and what are your thoughts on the trade?
My initial impression was, what the heck? Why are the Orioles doing that? And then you kind of automatically, cynically think, okay, so he's not healthy. They don't like his attitude. There's some stuff in the clubhouse that's a problem because he's like pre-arb or arb one or something, and he's young and he has all that pedigree and potential, and Taylor Ward's in his last year, and they have a lot of outfielders and they need pitching, the Orioles. So it didn't make any sense unless there's something that, you know, the public isn't privy to. So I don't know. I cynically thought there's something happening with Grayson. I mean, there's reports that started coming out today that he's had like bone spurs that have been plaguing him, and now he finally feels healthy for the first time, and he thinks the lat issues were caused by him changing his mechanics because of his hurt elbow. So like at face value, it seems that, you know, maybe he will be okay and have a full season, but like, I don't know. It just seemed, it was such an odd trade from like the typical valuation model standpoint that I just feel there's something happening. The Orioles kind of just gave up on him being a productive contributor for a real life baseball team.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a team that signed Tyler O'Neill to a 3-year deal last year. Has Colton Cowser. They're kind of plugged into the outfield. They're carrying Leody Tavares. Dylan Beavers. There's like, Heston Kerstad. I think there's six different outfielders now currently on their 26-man, 40-man roster that have like significant big league experience. So it's kind of strange because it's not like they all even like fit together. So you have to expect that maybe there's another trade coming here. But I think when you do, like, you know, when you bring up Ward's contract situation, it gets even more murky where if that's the kind of return that you're getting for someone like Grayson Rodriguez, what is in those medicals? That's the stuff that, you know, we don't know makeup. We don't know what these guys are really like. We can get glimpses. We can hear, you know, hints and allegations regarding what their makeup is like. The other thing that we don't have any idea about is what their physicals look like. You know, their medicals are, you know, one of the murkiest things in this industry for us. Like, you know, guys can be coming back from injury and bounce back really quickly. And then we kind of want to apply that to everybody, but it's just not something that you can just, you know, with a broad brush paint unilaterally. Like, it's just, it's not how it works. So, you know, I think that's maybe the thing that's lurking here that we don't know. And I had somebody in a front office, you know, with a prominent AL team once say that to me sitting on the Cape, that, you know, you guys do a good job breaking down prospects. And I always have to keep in mind that the two things you don't know is makeup and medicals. And I think in this situation, that might be the case. I don't think it's the makeup side of things with Grayson Rodriguez, though I can't speak with any 100% certainty about that. I would imagine, just based on the injury track record and the fact that he's a pitcher, and some of the things, as you said, that have been kind of coming out in drips and drabs of late, that, yeah, I think it's probably a medical issue, and there's maybe some risk that this guy never throws 150 innings in consecutive seasons, right? Could be one of those kind of things. So it'd be interesting to see how it all works out. That said, having looked at the Dodgers model, wouldn't you rather have like a really good pitcher for 100 innings and have like try to have a lot of pitching depth as opposed to having a sixth outfielder that is expiring in a year and is kind of redundant to like Tyler O'Neill in terms of like what his value is? Maybe not as good of an outfielder as O'Neill, maybe a little bit more on base ability. It's it's a really tricky trade. And, you know, I don't know if I like I guess Ward's situation's maybe a little bit better for fantasy if he's here for the long term, like for the entirety of the year, and he's not going to end up getting flipped in another deal. And Rodriguez ends up in a better pitcher's park. But the big question with him isn't skills or ability. It's always just been, how many innings am I going to get now? You know, I do think that Rodriguez maybe is a better bet. It's hard to say that he's going to get less wins with the Angels, because it's not like the Orioles were very good last year. And so far this roster is still looking like it has the same problems that it had last year. So we'll kind of see there. I could maybe see a scenario where it's a slight value bump for Rodriguez. You know, there's a new pitching coach there and with the Angels as well. So, you know, maybe just a change of scenery, and they change some things, and maybe there's some more positive stuff going on with Angels pitching than we think. So I'm going to try to look at the silver lining there with Grayson. And I could see a scenario where we look back on this in 2 years and say like, yeah, that was a good move for him. It was a good value bump, good park, etc.
I wonder if
playoff team, but
like the Orioles, if you remember, signed Jeff Hoffman, right, and as a free agent, and then they canceled the deal after looking at the medicals. So maybe they're very, very risk averse when it comes to medicals. And then, as you know, Hoffman signed with the Jays, had a pretty good season.
I think they're risk averse, full stop. Yeah. I don't even think it's just young pitching or pitching in general. I think they are risk averse. I think that, and this is kind of the mentality of like Sig, it was in the MVP machine of like Sig and Elias, is those two guys want to accumulate as many players as possible internally and have as many internal options as possible to fill spots, and then let guys walk in free agency and then get the pick compensation off of those players. That's kind of how they model their team building of like, we will evaluate, we will bring in the best talent, we will do a good job with player development, we will get the most out of these players. And then when it's either time to move on because we have redundancy and we can trade those guys to fill other spots, we'll do that, or we'll let them walk in free agency and we'll take the pick compensation. That has tended to be what their philosophy is in terms of team building. I mean, I think even going back to their time in Houston, that was kind of a prevailing mentality among those two.
So you think it's like, get Taylor Ward, he walks, they give him a qualifying offer, which they hope he doesn't accept, and then they get a compensation pick. Like, it's all like to get a compensation pick for 20.
Maybe that's part of it. Or, you know, they believe in the bat and they figure this gives them the ability to then move Dylan Beavers and, you know, Enrique Bradfield and somebody else. I don't know. You know, I think it, I think this is like a band-aid for this year, kind of a fill-in. You know, you could have Couser, Ward, and O'Neill in the outfield. And that allows you to move on with like a Dylan Beavers, who maybe they feel like the asset's as high as it's going to be, and he's a little platoony, et cetera. And they can move him maybe for a pitcher that they like, with more control in terms of the contract and years remaining. That's what my thought is. I think maybe that's a possibility.
Yeah, it like the Beavers platoon thing is a good point. Like they have maybe they him and O'Neill platoon, so that it's one guy gets lefties, one guy gets righties. But yeah, it was definitely a head scratching move. But you know, I'm sure they have their reasons that we're not privy to, and it all makes rational sense.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's jump into the first base rankings that came out this week on the site. We have catchers out. Of course, we already put out the top 500, so you can see where all these guys line up in the bigger list. But then we're giving you detailed breakdowns and information regarding all 40 players on all of our lists. So let's get through the top 10 here, Dylan. Number one, who would have thunk it a year ago? But Nick Kurtz, by far the number one first baseman in Dynasty. No argument for me.
Yeah, I mean, he was not even really a consensus top five FYPD pick, and then now he's, you know, top 15 Dynasty ahead of Vlad. I don't know if either of us would have ever dreamt of saying that so soon. But yeah, I mean, I think it's Nick Kurtz, Vlad, power, hitting. Kurtz is younger, better park. Vlad has never really put together the monster season we're hoping for. So I see the argument. I know I jumped ahead to Vlad. I'm kind of pairing them together because I went back and forth on these two when making the Dynasty 500. Just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I just went with the youth because they're very similar players. You know, Kurtz could do nothing for 3 years and then kind of catch up to where Vlad is. And you still have all those years ahead of him. So this is a youth thing and over heart. Because as you know, as the Blue Jay fan,
Vlad. You love Vlad.
I do.
Love him.
I'm speechless. I don't know the words to use because I'm realizing I've broken my own heart with this ranking.
Hey, if it's a league that has a fun category, then he's definitely number one. But yeah, I think, you know, Kurtz, it's the age thing, the all-around production, maybe better angles for power. And, I mean, he, you know, remember that season where Vlad hit all those home runs playing in minor league ballparks? Well, Nick Kurtz gets to do that for the foreseeable future.
Exactly.
We, you know, Vegas might be 2028. So, like, there might be two more years of him, you know, peppering balls over the walls there in Sacramento. So, yeah, I tend to agree. I think there's no argument on Vladimir Guerrero too. Let's chat a little bit about Bryce Harper, because I think you can say that some signs of aging are starting to show. Hasn't been consistently on the field. There was certain stuff that was down last year. There were comments by Dave Dombrowski regarding, you know, maybe this is, you know, when he starts to slow down a little bit. You know, you noted in your write-up that maybe that was simply a way to motivate Mr. Harper. Still a super valuable player. Why have him three above this list of guys like Alonso and Devers and Olsen and Freeman and all these guys that are obviously, you know, top-notch fantasy performers still? Is it the OBP sort of, or do you expect a little bit of a bounce back in 2026 for Harper?
I think it's both. I think OBP, he's kind of 20 points ahead of the other guys-ish. And so that's a big factor. He also steals more bases, I think, more. He can get to double-digit steals. You're not going to get that from Devers or Olsen and Alonso. These guys all kind of go in the same spot and redraft as well. But I just think in the OBP department, he just is far and away better. So he is a bit older, a couple of years older than that crew you just mentioned, but like we have them pretty close, like 36, 40, 42, like in the top 500. So it's not like he's miles ahead or a tier ahead. I think he's just the OBP and the speed is where I have him up ahead of those guys.
Yeah, and I think that's reasonable. And there's maybe a little bit more batting average. I think you look at Alonso. We've seen some pretty bad batting average years out of Alonso. Not that he was bad in 5x5, but it took a little bit of a hit. OBP is always right there, but the batting average, as we've talked about for years now on this show, when we're doing these off-season lists, the batting average drain can bring down the OBP a little bit too. You know, there's batting average factored into OBP. I know, shocking. And we also don't know where he's going to end up. I mean, there's a pretty good chance that if he doesn't re-sign with the Mets, that he does end up in a better home run park. I mean, there's probably only a few that are probably worse. So there's a good chance that he does end up in a park that's better for a swing, and we could see, you know, another 40 home run type of season out of Alonso. But there's some uncertainty there at this point in time, right? And, you know, if he signs with Cincinnati, that's not going to happen. But if he signed with Cincinnati, we would be willing to maybe move him up to three. I don't know. You know, that might change some things. Devers, still productive, but I think you at least have to think about the impact of San Francisco on a home run hitter, and especially like long term. You know, it may only be, let's say, 3 or 4 home runs a season. But over the course of 3 years, I mean, that's 12, maybe 13 home runs, right? Like, that has an impact on overall scoring year after year. So, you know, I think those are the only guys that are still in the conversation. Like, Olsen, you know, has had some incredible years, but he kind of seems like he peaked a few years ago with that 54 home run, 139 RBI season. You note it in your write-up. I don't know if that's a likely outcome once again. And then Freddie Freeman at this point is pretty old. Like, I think he's consistent, but also I think you're going to start to see some of those early Freddie years in terms of really good batting averages and probably a fair amount of counting stats. You're not going to see 30 home runs again. You know, it might be 18 some years with a lot of hits and all that sort of stuff. A couple years ago where he ranked really highly because he stole 20 bases, that will never happen again. Almost certainly. I think, you know, with Freeman, you have to factor in the age, and, you know, he could still be good for another 3 years, but you're not expecting the 320, 30 home run, 120 RBI season out of him either.
Yeah, I think what surprised me when I was doing the write-up was he didn't get 90 RBIs, or he just barely cracked 90 RBIs in that lineup with Betts and Otani. And I was very surprised. So, yeah, he'll give you the batting average. He's not going to give you the power that Alonso, Olsen, Devers, even Bryce will give you. And since he's a few years older than them, the decline's going to be steeper too. So, unfortunately, Freddie Freeman's on the decline.
Unfortunately, but, you know, we've had so many good Freddie years at this point that, you know, even if he's down for, you know, whatever, the next 4 years, I still see him playing for quite a while longer. And I think he's still going to be productive because of the batting average, the clutch hitting, still enough power, you know, all that kind of stuff. He still drives in a lot of runs. No reason to make that switch at this point in time, but yeah. So let's round out the rest of the top 10 here. We have Tyler Soderstrom at 8. It was a really big breakout season for Soderstrom. Still really young at 23 years old. Hit 25 home runs, 93 RBIs. There's batting average there as well. It's a 276 batting average. You noted in your write-up. The expected batting average is 272. So kind of right in line with that. And he's got outfield and first base eligibility. I think he's somebody that could continue climbing up the ranks over the next couple of years. We're kind of factoring in the same thing with Nick Kurtz in terms of that great home ballpark in Sacramento and how pleasant it is for power hitters. So does that come into the ranking at all? And could you see Soderstrom maybe, you know, after 2026, if he has a good year, kind of leapfrogging into that top 7, I'll say that he's more elite first baseman. I think he's kind of maybe the beginning of the next tier. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I think so. I think he could leap I think he could leap Freddie. Yeah, I was very surprised by the batting average because I thought he was going to be a low batting average guy with 30 home runs. I thought he would kind of scuffle on defense, you know, converted catcher playing in the field. And I just did not have very high hopes. I know he had a good pedigree. He wasn't even that great in RoboScout and all that. Like, he wasn't really dominating. He was just young for the levels, but he wasn't really putting up the huge seasons. Mm-hmm. So for him to have the year he had, the Athletics lineup with the aforementioned Nick Kurtz, Shea Langeliers with 30 home runs, Jacob Wilson on base machine, Lawrence Butler could be 2020. Like, there's a lot of hope in that Athletics lineup and in that park that you're talking about. I think if he's going to be a 30 home run guy who hits 265, he probably won't get the dual eligibility, probably won't have first base because of Nick Kurtz, but an outfielder who can do that is very, very valuable.
Absolutely. We got two more guys in the top 10. We're going to talk about a couple more. Before we do that, though, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Holiday shopping season is here, and we have you covered from head to toe.
Let's talk about an area that's not quite close to the toes. Let's get crazy with this holiday season. Yeah, that's MeUndies. I'm spinning around, but the holiday season, now you can get MeUndies with some holiday prints on them.
That's right. Ridiculously soft fabric holiday prints, matching holiday prints with your special person, or you can coordinate PJs for the family photo. And right now you can get up to 50% off with the code FOUL. We rock MeUndies. You should too. We're talking over 30 million pairs sold. Knock out all your holiday gifting needs today with MeUndies to get exclusive holiday deals up to, yep, I said it, 50% off. Go to MeUndies.com/foul and enter promo code FOUL. That's MeUndies.com/FOUL. Promo code FOUL for up to 50% off.
All right, and we are back. We are talking top 40 first baseman for 2026 Dynasty Baseball. The ranking is up at baseballamerica.com, as well as our top 40 catchers and our top 500 overall. Kind of did it backwards this year, releasing the top 500, and then we're releasing all the position rankings. We'll make adjustments as things come. We were talking about the show. We talked a little bit about the three primary NPB imports coming over in Amai, Murakami, and Akimoto. All of those guys, will, at least Akimoto and Amai, will see themselves move up or move on to our top 500 list. So look for that update. It may even be live by the time you are listening to this. But though Akimoto and Murakami may be eligible at first base sometime next season, we are going to proceed, at least in ranking them, as third basemen. So you see them next week when we put out the third base rankings. So let's move on to number 9. This guy just got paid. He just signed a big contract. That is Josh Naylor. He's returning to the Mariners. He finished second overall in 5x5 scoring per the Razzball Player Rater in 2025. This was your number 2 first baseman. And I think a lot of that were the stolen bases that kind of came out of nowhere. So how are you viewing Josh Naylor back in his favorite place of Seattle and you know, and playing with the Mariners. So what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously a very fun player.
Very fun player, good batting average. I think the separator I have from like Vinny Pasquantino, who's just after him, is the speed. I do not expect 30 stolen bases. I don't think anybody does. I don't even really expect 20, but you know, I could see 12. And that's ahead of Pasquantino. So Josh Naylor is always a value in redraft, as is Pasquantino. He's always at like just outside tier first base. And so you get good value of him, like Yandy and Vinny Pasquantino, or guys like that. Him being locked up, him being such a key kind of character guy for the Mariners in their postseason charge. I think he's a very solid player, and I like that he's locked up and you don't have to worry about him being traded around like Guardians with a Diamondback, blah, 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 just being moved around. He just now has a place so he can just kind of anchor a lineup, and that Mariners lineup's pretty good. So I think it's a good spot for Josh Naylor there.
Yeah, I 100% would agree. I'm a little bit nervous in terms of if I'm a Josh Naylor, someone who has him rostered. You know, I almost want to move him right now. I feel like this is like peak Josh Naylor value. Like after that season with the Steals, maybe somebody buys into it, you know, and they think he's like maybe, you know, prime Paul Goldschmidt. It's going to give you some homers and some steals and good counting stats. And he's fun and all that. Wears funky shoes, all that kind of thing. Right now, I think I'd be looking to move him. So like in our fades column, I'm going to write about, or I wrote about, you know, why I'm fading Naylor a little bit, but I still think it's a good player. I would certainly have him on my team. I just think right now is a great time to kind of cash in. So that was my statement on Naylor. Let's talk about somebody that I love though. And that is Vinny Pasquantino. This is one of my favorite players in fantasy baseball. He's a great character. He's a really good hitter. Balance of approach, contact, and power. He's in a lineup that's getting better with one of the best baseball players in the world in Bobby Witt Jr. So, you know, I know it's not a great ballpark. You know, he does his thing, though. You know, I have very little questions about what Pasquantino is going to be next year. Because I just think you look at the underlying skills and it's very consistent. And we're coming off an age 27 season where he hit a career high 32 home runs with a 15.7% strikeout rate. There's not a lot of guys like that. I even think there's a chance this season could be a little bit better. Had a 271 batting average on balls in play, always kind of a lower batting average on balls in play. So that's kind of in line. Gets a little luck though. Some of those numbers climb. Did have 113 RBIs as well.
He's just a guy that, like I said, he's always a redraft value. Robusca liked him. He's contact. You mentioned the strikeout rate, like very good at contact. I was shocked that he had 113 RBIs, 32 home runs. I knew he had a good season. I just felt that it was such so quiet that he accumulated all that. I had him on some teams too. So I wasn't really paying attention too much. It was more a week to week thing, but he doesn't play defense very well. He doesn't steal any bases. So, you know, he may not be, he may become a DH at some point soon, like full time. You know, Sal has been playing a bunch of first base. So, you know, this ranking can change, but just as a hitting machine, I just think he's very good. He doesn't walk that much either. So his OBPs are, you know, maybe slightly below average, but I think the batting averages will always help you. He tends to get a good number of plate appearances. He had 554 in 2024, and then he had 682 last year. When you play first base in DH, you tend to not miss that much time. I really like Pasquantino. I've always liked him. And I think, you know, he actualized his potential last year, and I expect it to continue as he's heading into his age 28 season. He's firmly in his prime.
So I'll also bring up here, we got some questions about why he was ranked versus Michael Bush. He outperformed Michael Bush last year. I don't know if people really, he was ranked ahead of him on the player radar in scoring. So maybe in OBP leagues, Bush might get a little bit of a bump. But even with, like, you're looking at those RBIs and you're looking at those home runs, and like he rarely strikes out. Like his swing strike rate is excellent. Like there's not a lot of swing and miss here. So I'll even take a bigger guy like that, that maybe attacks some balls on the outer part of the plate or just off the plate, but is aggressive, looking for barrels, looking to do damage. That's how you drive in runs. That's how you hit home runs, right? Can't walk the ball over the fence. That said, I love Michael Bush in OBP leagues. For me, he is just outside of the top 10 at the position. Or, you know, if you want to slide, maybe you don't believe in Naylor, you want to slide him down a little bit, fine. Pretty much everybody that was ranked ahead of him, with the exception of Bryce Harper, who missed some time, was outperformed him last year. We talked about Ben Rice last week. I don't think we need to get into Ben Rice again. Catcher and first base eligibility, so that's kind of a nice little win. And one of the reasons that he's ahead of Michael Bush we really like Michael Bush. And I think it's a statement on just how sort of deep the first base position is again, because a few years ago it was starting to really thin out, where there's a lot of these guys I want to roster. We kind of get to our first prospect and Bryce Eldridge at 13, Sal Stewart is a prospect at 14, but you know, you kind of comp to Vinny Pasquantino and could be a guy that produces really good numbers this year. And then even Kyle Manzardo, you know, who, you know, maybe hasn't set the world on fire at the big league level, but I still think there is some upside there in terms of, you know, what he can develop into. I don't know what your thoughts are on Manzardo.
I do like Manzardo. I understand he has his flaws, but he was always a guy that popped on RoboScout as well. He seems to still have the good angles. He doesn't have the elite, you know, bat speed or exit velocities, but he always seems to maximize his potential. I mean, the thing about Bush, just to go back to Bush versus Pasquantino, it's like the bat speed for Bush scares me. It's sort of in the bottom 20% of the league. It has been the last couple of years. Although last year he had a 266 expected batting average, the year before it was like 212 or 210 or something like that. So I'm just worried the bottom can drop out. He's kind of below average on whiffs and strikeouts too, whereas Pasquantino, as you mentioned, gets the bat on the ball. So I just feel that Pasquantino's floor is higher. Could Michael Bush have a better season than Vinny Pasquantino in 2026? Yes, he definitely can. But I think he has a much higher likelihood of having a worse season than Pasquantino by a larger margin, if that makes sense. Like his bottom error bars are much wider than his top one. So I think that was kind of the separator for me. But like you said, if you want batting average, it's Pasquantino. If you want OBP, it's Push. And they're pretty much the same age. You know, kind of pick the guy you want. And we have them pretty fairly close in the rankings anyway. So it's not like it's like 200 spots apart.
Yeah. And you know, I was mentioning like on Manzardo, I think that he isn't a bad pivot from some of those guys either. Somebody who had 27 home runs last year, you know, even if the batting average and OBP was pretty low, still a fairly useful player overall. So, and maybe a guy that, you know, I always thought the hit tool was pretty good. So I kind of wonder if he's a guy that could take another step forward this year. We have him at 15. All right, Dylan.
I just wanted one last thing about Manzardo, and like he's always been kind of viewed as a platoon bat, not against lefties. He actually had a higher WRC plus against lefties than Pasquantino or Bush. Yeah. Had an 86 WRC plus, was higher than Bush and Pasquantino. So maybe there's like a reputation thing that's unwarranted right now.
Yeah, maybe there's more there than we had even anticipated. But there you go. Some first base rankings for you. As I said, they're up at baseballamerica.com. You can check those out. We also just posted our targets, fades, and sleepers. You can check those out for a little bit more insight on who we're going to be targeting or staying away from in our respective drafts. So as always, for Jeff, for Dylan, thanks for tuning in. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.